You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Support for today's show comes from Google Play. Did you know that you can now download and listen to audiobooks on Google Play? That's right. With hands-free listening using Google Assistant or Chromecast, you can enjoy thousands of titles a la carte, no subscription necessary. There's even multi-device integration across the Google ecosystem. And for a limited time, you get $10 off your first one by visiting g.co/play/kick. That's g.co/play/kick. Find your story with audiobooks on Google Play. And now, enjoy the show. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis. Welcome to Kick-Ass News. From Ponce de Leon to the modern-day transhumanism movement, people have long obsessed over the ultimate quest for immortality. But recent science suggests that life expectancy may cap out at 125 years of age due to the limits of human DNA to replicate indefinitely. So maybe we're asking the wrong thing. Instead of chasing some mythical holy grail of eternal life, perhaps we should be asking how can we live not just longer, but happier, healthier, and more meaningful lives well into our 80s, 90s, and even 100s. In 2005, National Geographic fellow Dan Buettner decided to take a scientific approach to just that question, studying the so-called blue zones, the pockets of the world where people live the longest. His National Geographic cover story, The Secrets of Long Life, became the second most popular edition in the magazine's history and led Buettner to delve deeper into the subject with his best-selling book, The Blue Zones, 9 Lessons for Living Longer from the People Who've Lived the Longest. It's led to several follow-up books, including Thrive, The Blue Zone Solution, and The Blue Zones of Happiness, as well as a growing Blue Zones movement that has entire towns adopting the best practices of the world's centenarians. And today Dan Buettner joins me on the podcast to discuss the 5 small communities around the world where people live longer, richer lives well into their hundreds, including one right here in America, and he'll reveal the common habits that these regions share. He discusses the Japanese concept of ikigai and how calorie restriction can lengthen your life, what kinds of exercise are best for longevity and mobility, and why loners rarely live to be 100. He talks about an island in Italy where the men outlive the women, why people with daughters live longer than those with sons, and how modern conveniences are driving the world's blue zones into extinction. Then after the break, he discusses the science of happiness, including why people actually get happier with age, how money really can buy happiness, but only to a point, and why genetics play a bigger role than you might think. Plus, the one factor that matters most to your happiness and longevity, even more than exercise and healthy eating. Coming up with Dan Buettner in just a moment. Dan Dan Buettner is an explorer, National Geographic fellow, award-winning journalist and producer, and best-selling author who discovered the five places in the world dubbed Blue Zones where people live the longest, healthiest lives. His article about the Blue Zones was one of National Geographic's best-selling editions, and he followed it up with four New York Times bestsellers, The Blue Zones, Lessons for Living Longer from the People Who've Lived the Longest, Thrive, Finding Happiness the Blue Zones Way, The Blue Zone Solution, Eating and Living Like the World's Healthiest People, and most recently, The Blue Zones of Happiness, Lessons from the World's Happiest People. He also works with municipal governments, large employers, and health insurance companies to implement Blue Zones projects in communities, workplaces, and universities. Plus, Dan Buettner holds three, count them three, Guinness World Records in distance cycling. Dan, thanks for coming on the podcast.
It's my pleasure to be here, and I'm sorry about the titles of my books. They sound like mouthfuls.
Not at all. You know, I'm so fascinated by the Blue Zone Project and all your research. I've long been interested in longevity, but when I think of centenarians, it often brings to mind those local news pieces about someone's grandma who just turned 101, and they inevitably ask, how did she do it? And she may say her secret is she eats ice cream every day or goes ballroom dancing twice a week, which is cute, but it's entirely anecdotal. It's not very useful. On the other hand, what you did is you looked at the commonalities among centenarians, right?
Right. So in a sense, we reverse engineered longevities. And you can't start with one and extrapolate to generalization, but you can find populations, confirm that they're long-lived. And by the way, we don't look at just the centenarian concentration, but we also look at middle-aged life expectancy and low rates of mortality. Mm-hmm. It's actually a better measure. And once you can identify populations that are living verifiably longest, there's methodologies to determine what exactly they're doing that's explaining this longevity. And when you see the same pattern over and over and over again, as we've seen in these Blue Zones areas, five of them, you can start to get a pretty good idea of what maybe we ought to be doing if we want to make it to our 10th decade and arrive not only healthy and vital, but also happy.
How did Blue Zones first pop up on your radar?
I had been assigned a project for National Geographic to find the areas around the world where people live the longest. And it's actually a very rigorous exercise because you have to find birth about 100 years ago, say between 1915 and 1920, and you have to follow those births for a century and adjust for immigration and emigration and see who's surviving. And it took us 2.5 years and probably cost us $300,000 to go through worldwide census data to find the longest lived parts of the world. And we first found Okinawa, Japan, had the longest disability-free life expectancy in the year 2000, and did our first expedition there. It started to piece together an explanation. Then in 2004, I connected with Michel Poulon and Gianni Pes in Sardinia. They'd identified an area in the highlands called the Noro province where there's the highest concentration of males. And they actually were using the blue pen circling the 14 villages of extreme longevity, calling it the Blue Zones. And then inspired by that name, I extended it to any part of the world where people live the longest. And mm-hmm. we went on to find the Loma Linda, the Seventh-day Adventists, longest-lived Americans, the island of Ikaria, Greece, a place where people are living 8 years longer, but largely without dementia, and then the Nicoya Peninsula of Costa Rica that produces arguably the healthiest, oldest people, and they do so for about 1/15th the amount we spend on healthcare.
This is the skeptic in me, but in almost every case, you're looking at a very tight-knit, in some cases isolated community. How much of it could be less about their lifestyles, but maybe more about just some people years ago won the genetic lottery and just keep interbreeding within that small group and perpetuating those healthy genes?
So you're smart to sense that. And indeed, in Sardinia, there may be a bit of a genetic story there. They're okay. The second purest race in the world next to Iceland, genetically speaking. But all the other Blue Zones areas are heterogeneous. In other words, they're melting pots of people with from all sorts of backgrounds, just like the United States. So there's no genetic story in Ikaria or Nicoya or among the Seventh-day Adventists.
Okay, interesting. I want to try my best to cover all of these, at least as much as we can within this time. Japan is, of course, well known for having some of the longest life expectancies, but within that country, you zeroed in on Okinawa as having, I guess, a higher than usual proportion of centenarians and even super centenarians. You open the book talking about a particular woman that you encountered along the way. Tell us a little about her.
You find what the average person does in these Blue Zones areas, and then you kiss enough frog, so to speak, until you find a prince or a princess whose life matches up with the average. And this Ushi Ukushima happened to be the woman. She was 108 years old. She had a strong sense of purpose, which is worth about 8 years of life expectancy. They call it their ikigai, the reason for which they wake up in the morning. She belonged to a moai. We now know that if you're lonely in this country, in other words, if you don't have three good friends you can count on a bad day, it shaves about 8 years off of your life expectancy. Ushi belonged to a circle of friends. They call it a moai, M-O-A-I, of five friends that she's had since childhood that she could count on. She ate the quintessential Okinawan diet for most of her life of sweet potatoes, a purple sweet potato called imo, turmeric, bitter melon, and probably eight times the amount of tofu that we eat. She drank green tea all day long. She surrounded herself with the right kinds of people. She lived, she moved, had gentle, low-intensity physical activity every day. She was the emblematic centenarian that told the story of Okinawa.
Yeah, and the Okinawans had this philosophy of eating that sort of echoes what I've heard from a lot of scientists I've had on the show, which is if you reduce your calorie intake by, say, 20 or 30%, it's scientifically proven that you can extend your life by 20 to 30%. That bared out in your research?
Right. So the Okinawans have a Confucian saying, Hara Hachi Bu, which reminds them to stop eating when their stomachs are 80% full, and they'll say Hara Hachi Bu like a prayer before a meal. And it turns out that Okinawans had forced caloric restriction for most of their lives. They went through a terrible time during World War II. There were a couple other periods of famines. And while caloric restriction, or this 20 or 30% fewer calories, won't necessarily extend your life, it slows the rate of oxidation, of internal oxidation, and can help keep you from foreshortening your life. I guess it's just sort of a semantics thing, but
But there is a certain amount of wear and tear that comes into metabolizing food each time, I guess, huh?
Yes. So inside of your cells, there are mitochondria. And when they metabolize food and the system is working at full throttle, it throws off a free radical, which literally rusts you from the inside out. And when you don't have quite enough food or you're in kind of a hibernative state, this mitochondria doesn't throw off as much free radical. So you don't have this oxidating agent circulating through your blood, wreaking havoc on your arteries, shrinking your brain, wrinkling your skin, and so forth. So the bottom line, it's a good idea to cut back on calories.
Yeah, and this Okinawan idea of ikigai, that's something that cuts across all of these cultures, a sense of purpose or a reason to get up in the morning, family, and that sort of thing. That was one of the commonalities you found, right?
Exactly, a vocabulary for purpose. All of these Blue Zones have them, and it's top of mind, and it is far more powerful when it comes to longevity than diet or exercise. We tend to focus on diet and exercise. The problem with diet and exercise is they tend to be short-lasting, whereas if you have taken the time to really understand your sense of purpose and you're applying it day in and day out, you're living a life more intentionally, probably with less stress, probably with less inflammation, with less anger. It's just healthier, and it keeps the I would say that the sort of flames that consume our lives burning much lower than they would if you're rudderless throughout your life.
And kind of alongside that, religion plays into it as well. In Loma Linda, you have this pocket of Seventh-day Adventists who have these incredibly healthy, long lives. And a lot of it has to do with kind of their beliefs, you know, cutting out meat and that sort of thing. But were you able to pin down, I guess, exactly how spirituality impacts longevity?
So it's, you can't really measure spirituality, but you can measure religiosity.
Okay.
Religiosity is simply the number of times you show up for a faith-based community in a month.
Okay.
And there's a strong correlation. We know that people who are showing up to church, temple, or mosque four times a month live 4 to 14 years longer than people who don't. And we don't know if that's because people who show up to religious ceremony, gatherings have better social networks, or they're less likely to engage in risky behaviors, or they're able to sort of downshift and de-stress an hour a week, or if because there's a God and, you know, God likes people who worship her more than than people who don't. But it works across the demographics. It works everywhere in the world. I'm actually quoting Dr. Gary Fraser, who did a meta-analysis of religious people everywhere. I just happened to observe in Blue Zones, of the 300 or so centenarians I interviewed, only 5 did not have a God in their lives.
Yeah, it maybe makes sense, I guess. If you believe that not everything is under your control, then maybe you have less to worry about. Maybe you don't fret as much over small things or arguments and that sort of thing, things you can't change, I suppose.
Yes. So whenever you're worried, whether you wake up and you worry about what you're doing in life or just a day-to-day stressor, it triggers something called the inflammatory response. And those ensuing biochemicals wreak havoc on your body. They're the root of every major age-related disease. Heart disease, several kinds of cancer, diabetes, even dementia. So whatever mechanism we can deploy to lower that inflammatory response, to lower the stress in our lives, is going to make a huge difference over time. So knowing your purpose and being able or having a religion or being able to depend on a God or relinquish the day-to-day stresses to this quote-unquote higher power over time has an enormous impact on our overall health.
Now, you mentioned dementia a second ago. Were most of the centenarians that you talked to, were they mentally sharp, able to hold a good conversation, good mental recall, and so forth?
So not 100% of centenarians in Blue Zones area have alluded to dementia, but we found places, for example, Icaria, that has about 1/5 the rate of dementia that you'd expect to see in the United States.
Wow.
So in the U.S., if you reach age 85 and you're a man, there's about a 40% chance you're suffering from dementia. If you're a woman, it's about 60%. In Icaria, it was about 10%. And Okinawa, it's also very – in all these Blue Zones areas, if you're living a long time, it means you've been a healthier most of your life, and it also means that you've been mentally sharper most of your life as well.
Interesting. Were there any specific habits that you could point to that kept them sharp? Or I assume that they were working late into life and that sort of thing, maybe?
So they were sleeping well.
Oh, okay.
Most of them go to bed shortly after sunset and sleep to about sunrise. They took naps. They tend to have about half the rate of depression that we have in the United States. There's an association between depression and dementia. They tend to eat mostly a plant-based diet. We know very clearly that a diet that's heavily laden with animal products is associated with higher rates of dementia. But I would say most interesting, and this is just an observation, but I believe it's a strong observation. So the area we found in Korea that had almost no dementia, relatively speaking, also they drink almost every day of their lives a tea made out of either oregano, rosemary, sage, or dandelion. And we had all those herbs sent to the University of Athens School of Pharmacology and tested. And we found that all of them were, number one, anti-inflammatories, and two, mild or medium strength diuretics. And diuretics are kind of a natural way to lower blood pressure.
Okay. So you think that was a factor?
I do. I do. Wow. That's my opinion. Right, I can say with 100% certainty is they drink these teas every day, and with 100% certainty, they have very low rates of dementia. I can't make a causal so, but I believe it.
Yeah. Now, the gender disparity that we see across the board when it comes to life expectancy rates, in other words, women outliving men, seems to hold true across most of these blue zones. But particularly in Sardinia, it turns out that the men live longer than the women. Why is that?
Okay, so just to be clear, like in the United States, for every one male centenarian, there's about five female centenarians. Mm. But the nuance there is if a guy makes it to 100, there's a much better chance he's going to be sharp and functioning compared to women.
Oh, really?
So, but in blue zones areas, especially in Nicoya, Sardinia, and Icaria, the centenarian ratio, male to female, is closer to 1 to 1. And there are a couple possible explanations. In Icaria, for example, if a woman loses her spouse, she never gets married and she's kind of on her own. And that's probably not good for her life expectancy.
Yeah.
If a man in Icaria loses his spouse, he ends up marrying a younger woman who takes care of him or makes him rise to the occasion. This is well documented. It's funny, but it's true also. But in Sardinia, there's a different thing going on. Most of the Mediterranean area, men sort of wear the pants, you know, they're the authoritarian head of the family. But in Sardinia, women wear the pants, and they brandish the rifle, and they take care of financial matters, and they sort of boss their men around. And they may be actually bearing more of the stress load, and therefore that might be lowering their life. It may be the entire population is living longer, but the women are somewhat hobbled because of the extra stress they're taking on because they're taking care of their man-children.
Yeah, it sounds like the guys in Sardinia kind of have the life there because, you know, they're shepherds or something. They're tending the fields, and then they spend the rest of their day taking a nap, hanging out with their buddies, drinking wine.
It's not made. Yeah, so my colleague, Gianni Pess, interviewed about 250 centenarians and asked them about the characteristics of their life and correlated it to their chance of reaching 100 and found three very interesting things. The third biggest predictor was the pitch of the land. It turns out the steeper the terrain they lived on, the better chance they had to live to 100.
Okay.
And it's probably because they had more physical exertion just getting to the store or going to work in the morning.
Makes sense.
The second one was the number of daughters. I thought this was interesting. The guys most likely to reach age 100 had five daughters. And we don't know if that favors longevity because daughters tend to take care of their aging fathers or if it's a selection bias. In other words, if you can survive five adolescent girls, make it to 100, it's no problem.
Yeah.
But the biggest predictor was your profession. Hmm. So the farmers in Sardinia, they don't live any longer than their Italian counterparts. It's the shepherds. And these are the guys, to your point, have this low-intensity physical activity. They wake up when the sun's warm, spend some time with their animals, take a nap. They're in town at 5 o'clock drinking wine. But all of this, for me, goes to inform how we might think about our lives and our level of physical activity. Through this 18 years of studying the longest-lived people, I've become really skeptical of this idea of CrossFit and running marathons and working hard to look ripped. I actually believe that this gentle walking or doing things like yoga are far better for you than doing hard workouts or weekend warrior things that, first of all, run the risk of injury, which will stop you in your tracks.
Yeah.
But number two, they also trigger this inflammatory response. When you wake up after a really hard workout and your muscles are sore and you feel groggy, that's inflammation. Same inflammation that comes from stress, that comes from eating crappy food, and that we know is the root of every major age-related disease.
Interesting. So if I'm fatigued and have sore muscles from a workout, cumulatively over time, that could be reducing my life, you think?
I think it's probably okay if you're a young man,
okay,
in your 20s and maybe 30s. But in your 40s, 50s, if you're doing it often, I believe it's a net negative. Huh. And certainly if you look at the example of Blue Zones, these people aren't exhausting themselves. Yeah. It's gentle.
It sounds like for most of them, they don't even think about exercise. It's just incorporated into their daily routines, right? They walk to the market or walk to meet friends.
Our team figures they're nudged into physical activity every 20 minutes through gardening. They don't have mechanical conveniences in their kitchens or their homes or their yards or doing yard work by hand or kneading bread by hand. If they are doing intentional physical activity, it's almost always a walk. And for them, it falls in the category of socializing or of recreation. It's not one of these things we put in our Outlook to-do list, and we got to get it done before we go home and watch TV. It's a joyful thing. So they're doing it every day, and they're doing it, you know, little bits all day long. Mm-hmm. And I believe that makes a huge cumulative difference over time.
Yeah, that's smart. A little less wear and tear. Now, you say that most of these traditional lifestyles in the Blue Zones are dying out, actually. Where are the threats coming from?
Threats are coming from right here in the United States.
Yeah.
We've exported the standard American diet. Fatty, sugar, processed, meaty, and they were genetically hardwired to crave fat and sugar and salt. And most of their lives, they haven't had regular access to that kind of food. And all of a sudden it arrives and they embrace it with the same zeal we embrace it. And unfortunately, it's in many cases reversing the incredible longevity gains that they've achieved over the last century.
Yeah, I think you say that in Okinawa, there's been this explosion of Burger Kings and fast food burger places all over the place that's threatening that population's longevity.
Yeah, well, it's the American base, the Army base there, which is right in the middle of the island.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And around it has popped up, sprouted a forest of McDonald's and A&W root beers, and it's wreaked havoc. Also, the GIs introduced spam to Okinawa
after the war
in the 1940s, and they were starved. And you give starved people fatty, salty pork, and man, they loved it. But unfortunately, now, though this is the island that produced the longest lived population in the history of the world,
Sheesh.
They're now the least healthy island in all of Japan.
Oh, that's amazing.
So you can see how these longevity's fragile.
Mm-hmm.
But we know what it is, we know how to preserve it, and we know how to apply it.
Do the centenarians that you encountered spend much time actually thinking about death or mortality?
No.
No?
They never think to themselves at age 50, well, God darn it, I'm going to get on this longevity diet. They never buy a treadmill or call an 800. Mm-hmm. None of the stuff we think of about longevity. The reality is they have no idea how they got to live to be 100. They didn't try. They don't have individual responsibility. They don't have great discipline. They just live their lives. Mm-hmm. And the great insight there, of course, is that longevity is not something that is successfully pursued. We tend to do that in the United States. We try to pursue health and buck up and get on the program. Longevity successfully ensues from having the right environment, the right ecosystem around you. And that, I think, is the big aha of the book.
Okay, so not a lot of transhumanists in Sardinia then, I guess. We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more with Dan Buettner when we come back in just a minute. If you're on the fence about life insurance, get down with Ladder. Ladder is the smart, easy, and instant way to get and manage life insurance. Just go online and apply. It only takes a few minutes, and there's no paperwork or fees. Once approved, your coverage could start almost immediately. The insurance you need today may be quite different than the insurance you'll need 5 years from now, so Ladder makes it easy for you to change and cancel any time without penalties or fees. And if you need a lab appointment, a traveling technician will come to your home, office, or wherever is convenient for you for free. If you have questions, simply reach out to one of Ladder's licensed insurance professionals at any point. Unlike other companies, Ladder's professionals are not commission-based sales agents, so you can trust that they have your best interests at heart. Ladder provides the simplest, most straightforward, and affordable type of life insurance and is licensed and backed by trusted partners with billions in coverage. Go to ladderlife.com to learn more and apply right now with their online application. Once more, that's ladderlife.com. Get off the fence about getting life insurance with Ladder. Hey folks, I want to tell you about an awesome podcast I recently discovered that deals with one of the most complex and politically charged issues today. It's called Hidden Truth, and it's in its second season. Join host Jimmy Breslow as he does a deep dive into the transgender movement by interviewing his fraternity brother Dave, who recently became his sister Sabrina. Most people have never met a trans person or even know what it means, but while most people are nervous to talk about it, Jim dives right into the most controversial topics with Sabrina and experts on all sides of the issue. And Sabrina tells Jim for the first time about sneaking away from the fraternity in college to hang out with transgenders in Hollywood and recently leaving his wife and kids in order to transition. No matter what your feelings are on the topic, you're guaranteed to think differently about it after listening to Hidden Truth Podcast. Tune in to hear more wherever you listen to podcasts. And check out Season 1 of Hidden Truth, where Jim investigates what really happened the night of the Las Vegas shooting. And now, back to the podcast. More recently, you came out with a book called The Blue Zones of Happiness. These are the countries that typically rank at the top of the so-called Global Happiness Index. This seems like a much harder task because with longevity, you at least have some objective measurements to work with. How do you come up with objective criteria for how happy a person is?
Well, to your point, happiness is a meaningless term, academically speaking, but surveyors can very accurately assess life satisfaction. And life satisfaction keys off the question, imagine your life as a whole. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being your best imaginable life and 1 being your worst imaginable life, how satisfied are you with your life?
Mm-hmm.
And you get enormous variations. Places like Moldavia or Syria or Tanzania, those people are saying on average a 3. And in places like Denmark and Costa Rica, they're saying 8. So there are clearly places where people are more who evaluate their lives better. And then there's another set of questions called affect question, positive and negative affect, that rely on 24-hour recall. You only remember about 2% of your life. You remember the high points and the low points.
Interesting.
And what happened last. And so when I ask you to evaluate your life on a scale of 1 to 10, you don't have much data to do so. But when I ask you the last 24 hours – how much did you feel joy and pain and worry and anxiety? You can remember fairly clearly. So another way of measuring happiness is to assess that 24-hour recall and have people rate their experience in that 24 hours. And the idea behind Blue Zones of Happiness was to identify the countries in the world that had the highest life satisfaction, the highest positive daily experience and the highest sense of purpose, and then draw the lessons from those places.
Yeah, and I'm interested in this idea of life satisfaction being one of the major factors because over the years, I've had a number of people tell me that the secret to happiness is low expectations. And that kind of echoes something that I feel I heard from the Danes at some point when they first emerged at the top of this list. Does that make sense to you? Is there something to be said for being a little bit cynical or not expecting too much?
No, I think no. The low expectations is a complete misguided cliche when it comes to the Danes have the highest expectations of any people in the world. They expect free healthcare, education,
yeah, in that
a sense. Guaranteed comfortable retirement, mm-hmm. and they get it.
Mm-hmm.
And the secret to happiness actually is, like longevity, is to change your environment. that, you know, we've heard all these positive psychology techniques like appreciation journals or learning how to savor or gratitude. And by the way, they're all pretty good ideas, but there is zero evidence showing that any of those things work for the long term.
Okay.
They tend to work for a few weeks or months as long as we remember to do them. But as soon as we forget to do them, the impact disappears. The idea behind Blue Zones of Happiness, and by the way, it was also November's cover story for National Geographic, was to distill this ocean of big data we now have around happiness to find out how you can shape your surroundings so you're more likely to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if happiness were a cake recipe and, you know, some of the ingredients require, you need food and you need shelter, you need health care, you need some education, you want to have meaningful work, you want to have somebody to love in life. But the most important ingredient in that recipe, the ingredient with the most variability, is where you live.
So, really?
So if you're unhappy and you want to get happier, the most dependably powerful thing you can do is move. And we actually know this by following immigrants from places like Moldavia to Denmark. Moldavia is very unhappy. Denmark's very happy. Or from places in Asia and Africa where people aren't very happy to Canada, where people are very happy. And mm-hmm. within 1 year, nothing else changes about these immigrants. Their gender stays the same. Their age stays pretty much the same. Their sexual orientation, et cetera. But in every case, within a year, they start on average reporting the happiness level of their adoptive home. So in other words, from Moldavia, they go from a 3 to an 8,
wow.
which is a way bigger jump that you'll ever yeah. get by some sort like a raise or...
So just changing your geographic location can trump the fact that you're no longer around your extended family, that you're away from your old friends and all that, and everything that's familiar. You have to learn a new language. All that is trumped by geography?
So you have to think of it in terms of stacking the deck.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't speak to an individual case, but
sure.
I can tell you if you take 1,000 immigrants in Moldavia and move them to Denmark, their average score is going to go up to the level of Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
So let's face it, not everybody's going to move to get happier. But then the next step is using something called regression analysis, which is finding correlation.
Yeah.
We can now say the things that you can do that make it more likely you'll be happy. For example, for every new happy friend you add to your immediate social circle, your own chances of happiness go up by about 15%.
Huh.
Living in a neighborhood that has access to green spaces, that has sidewalks, so that are a walkable neighborhood, and a neighborhood that has access to healthy food raises your chances of happiness.
Can money buy happiness? Do we have any
money
cause and
can
effect
buy happiness,
data there?
But it reaches a saturation point at
okay.
a pretty low level. So when it comes to that daily experience, on average in the United States, happiness, money reaches a saturation point at about $54,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to life satisfaction, how we evaluate our life, it's more at about $90,000 or $100,000 a year. But
okay.
after that point, seeking more money to get more happiness is a fool's errand.
How about what you do with your money? Does that affect it?
You'll get more happiness per dollar if you buy financial security over mm-hmm. consumption.
Okay.
So let's just say, take an example. You all of a sudden got a $1,000 bonus. So you could take that $1,000 and you could buy a new gadget or some new shoes or new clothes. And that will give you kind of a spike of satisfaction that will last probably about 9 months on average. And then it'll wear out.
Mm-hmm.
But taking that same $1,000 and paying down your mortgage or putting it in a savings plan or even buying insurance buys you this financial security, which can last years or decades or a lifetime. So you actually get a better return with financial security than you do with consumption.
I was a little bit surprised to see that Singapore made your list of the happiest places in the world because That's a place where you can go to prison for chewing gum, or in some cases, you can even have the death penalty for a drug offense. There are fewer democratic freedoms overall. That doesn't sound like a very happy place to me. So what's going on
there? In fact, the first time that I tried to write this story for National Geographic, the then editor killed it. But 9 years later, as Singapore consistently tops the happiest places in Asia, the data overrode what people think. So first of all, you don't could put in jail for gum chewing. No. You might get a small fine. Secondly, when there's usually a trade-off between security and freedom. Mm-hmm. To let people do whatever they want can often, you know, if everybody could hold, have own hand grenades and smoke crack, we'd have a dangerous society. Singapore favors that security, and actually the human psyche favors security. Like you can't own a gun in Singapore. You can't smoke crack freely. But on the other hand, your children can walk on any street and you have almost no fear that anything will happen. A woman can walk any time of day or night, have mm-hmm. almost no fear. They are very hard on drugs, to your point. If you have more than 15 grams of heroin, that you get the death penalty. On the other hand, we have an opioid crisis here that creates immeasurable misery.
True.
It costs $750 billion a year. 114 people die every day because of the disease, and that ripples through families and communities. And Lee Kuan Yew, who was the prime minister who made these laws, kind of assessed the danger, the downside of a death penalty for drugs. And indeed, 12 or 14 people a year die, and these are people who choose to deal drugs. On the other hand, they have zero opioid crisis. They have almost zero drug problems.
So maybe it's a net positive.
So from an objective sort of data approach, it was a very good policy decision. But values come into play.
Now, only one of these countries on the happiness list overlaps with your longevity blue zones. That's Costa Rica. Does that tell us something about Costa Rica, or perhaps something about the other countries that don't have that overlap?
There's no such thing as a coincidence when it comes to a happy place. If the place is a happy country or city today, it's because there's a clear genesis. There were enlightened leaders 50 to 150 years ago who took their focus off of just economic development and focused on quality of life. They made literacy a top priority. They educated girls, mothers, so that they had fewer children. Those children were healthier, better educated. They grew up to be more productive, voted for better leaders, were better parents themselves, and started this upward spiral. The happiest places in the world tend to invest in health. In the United States, we actually pay for sickness mitigation. About $3.7 trillion a year we spend on avoidable diseases. In places like Costa Rica, which produces not only the longest lived people, but the happiest people, they invest in health. Every man, woman, and child in that country, used to be third world not too long ago, gets a free visit from a health ambassador every year who will catch a high blood pressure or diabetes or depression before it becomes a six-figure 911 problem.
Yeah, and there were a number of things that were kind of surprising in this book. There's some interesting data here about how gender equality affects happiness in these different countries. How does that bear out?
Yeah, so this is an interesting correlation. So in places where there's gender equality, so men and women are treated equally, the men are happier than the women. And in places where there's not gender equality, the women are happier than the men. So it turns out, from a man's point of view, it's actually in our own best interest to make sure women are treated fairly.
So. Yeah. Is it just that women are less happy because they have more responsibilities suddenly and more to deal with? I don't know. And so forth?
I can only hypothesize, but so, when you have women in some traditional countries, their main job is being a mother and raising children, which can be a very fulfilling full-time job. But in places where there's more gender equality, there's more pressure to take on a career on top of that, and that could double the amount of hours you work and double the amount of stress. And it could just be that places where women aren't treated fairly, there's not equality, so everybody's less happy.
Okay.
Indeed, it may not be the ideal situation for men to be in a place where women aren't being treated fairly.
Yeah. I mean, Afghanistan, somewhere where you might have to worry about your life or your daughter's getting kidnapped, you know.
It's often in Islamic countries. And it may be that when women aren't treated fairly, they bond together, mm-hmm. and there's a camaraderie that you get kind of supersede the unfairness they're getting from outside of their circles from a larger community. I don't really know, but it's something interesting to think about. And once again, Blue Zones of Happiness is about how to stack the deck in favor of happiness.
Right.
It starts with the fact that about 40% of your happiness or lack thereof is dictated by genes. 15% is life circumstances. You know, if you're chronically in pain, it's hard to be happy. And then about 45 or 50% is up to you. And I make the argument that if you want to get happier, don't try to change your behavior, because that will fail for almost all of the people almost all the time in the long run. Mm-hmm. Try to shape your environment, your surroundings, and here's how to do it.
Yeah, I'm very interested in that 40% that's genetic, because that makes sense when we're talking about longevity, that there's a big genetic component. But actual happiness, our happiness, there's a good portion of that comes from mom and dad, huh?
Right.
Not from the environment.
Right. So we're all so if you imagine a spectrum on 1 to 10, we're sort of genetically endowed with what I call a set range. Mm-hmm. So some people, so imagine a State Farm insurance salesman. I don't know why I said State Farm, but who on a good day is a 9 and on a bad day is a 6. And then imagine a existential poet, for example, who on a good day is a 6 and on a bad day is a 2. So it would be very hard to get the poet up to the level of chronic happiness as the State Farm salesperson. But there's a number of things the poet could do and the salesman could do to push their own happiness to the upper register of their of their set range.
And the other thing that surprised me, aside from the gender equality factor in the genetics, is apparently the older you get, the happier you are. Now, that seems totally counterintuitive, because we spend most of our life fearing death and fearing old age. How does that work?
We tend to be happy in our 20s and optimistic, and then we have children. And actually, by one measure, our happiness goes down when we have children. The daily experience tends to drop. We get adapt to our marriages, and marriage over the long run typically doesn't deliver much in the way of happiness. It does in the short run, but we kind of go back to the way we were before marriage after a few years. Our worst years tend to be between age 45 and 55 in the United States, are least happy on average. And then as long as you can keep your health, happiness starts to rise, and it continues to rise into your hundreds.
Really?
So, and that's probably because we learn how to become satisfied. We adapt to what we have rather than wishing for what we don't. And that's probably what we get good at. And you know, wisdom is the cross section of knowledge and experience. And the older people, they accumulate that wisdom, which I think favors their happiness over time as well.
Overall, the U.S. ranks lower than these countries in the happiness index. But you talk about certain areas in the U.S. that are the happiest places in America. And I'm not talking about Disney World. What are some of the happiest places in the country?
So I teamed up with ShareCare, Gallup, and the National Geographic, and we created an index that 15 metrics that amount to the componentry of happiness, like do you feel secure where you live? Are you able to use your strengths to do what you do best every day? Are you able to take vacations? Even the quality of water. There's a strong correlation between water quality in a city and the happiness. So
not Flint.
Not Flint. Okay. Flint's at the very bottom, but no, Naples, Florida.
Okay.
Charlottesville, North Carolina, Carmel, Santa Barbara, California. And the happiest was Boulder, Colorado.
I don't know why, but that seems surprising to me.
Yeah, I actually, in that story I did for National Geographic, I went to try to explain why it's so happy. And it turns out that indeed in the 1960s, the people who moved there did so because of the access to nature and access to good physical activity and a clean environment. And they fastidiously protected that. They took charge. So in Boulder, there's a green belt around the city so that you can take your hour lunch and go for a hike and be back in your office in time for your 1 o'clock meeting. There are no billboards. Think about billboards. Huh. Who does anybody like billboards except for the guy who owns the billboards and the advertisers? Nobody likes billboards. And in fact, they encourage us to do things that make us unhappy, like eat junk food and buy crap we don't like, don't really need. So, Boulder has none. Boulder favors the pedestrian over the motorist. So it's a place where you don't have the drone and of traffic, and it's safe to walk. And it's just a place that favors human beings over kind of blind economic development like so many other places.
Yeah, and you've been trying to apply these principles to entire towns here in the U.S. Is there something to be said for having a little bit of peer pressure or a group effort as opposed to just trying to adopt these Blue Zones principles on your own?
In 2009, I got a grant from AARP to try to create a Blue Zone in the United States. I auditioned 5 cities, and we picked Elbert Lee, Minnesota, and we changed its environment. And over the course of 2 years, we saw their life expectancy go up by 3 years and their healthcare costs go down by 40%. And we got very popular in a hurry. We're now in 26 American cities. And in each one of those cities, we have full-time people, 3 squads. One squad works with city governments to pass a policy to favor fruits and vegetables over junk food, to favor the pedestrian over the motorist, and to favor the non-smoker over the smoker. We have a second squad that administers a Blue Zone certification program for schools, restaurants, grocery stores, and workplaces to make those places 20% healthier, make the healthy choice the easy choice, essentially. Mm-hmm. And then a third squad gets 15% of the population to sign a Blue Zone pledge. And all they agree to do is go take checklists into their homes to optimize their homes for health, to join a new social network of 4 or 5 people who walk or eat plant-based food, and third, to take a purpose workshop and volunteer. And when you orchestrate this perfect storm of people, places, and policies, and you keep the pressure on it for 3 to 5 years, we see double-digit drops in BMI at the population level. So in other words, the weight of an entire city will drop 15 or 16%.
No kidding.
Smoking will drop by we've seen as much as 28%, and people's reported life satisfaction goes up. And one of our most successful communities is right here in California, the beach cities of Redondo, Hermosa, and Manhattan Beach.
Uh-huh.
Over the past 6 years, they've seen their health dramatically increase. They'll probably save on the order of $60 or $70 million in healthcare costs because they adopted the Blue Zones project.
Wow. Before we go, what would your top 5 suggestions to people be?
Number 1, adopt a plant-based diet for both happiness and health. And the 4 pillars to longevity diets everywhere: greens, whole grains, nuts, and beans.
Okay.
If you're eating a cup of beans a day, it's probably adding about 4 years to your life expectancy.
Wow.
Number 2, carefully curate your immediate group of friends. You want to shoot for 3 to 5 friends who you can count on a bad day, who you can have a meaningful conversation with, and who have healthy habits themselves and have a sunny outlook, because that's health habits are contagious. Number 3, take the time to do an internal assessment of your values, what you're good at, what you like to do, and where the cross section is. And I would say that's your sense of purpose. and make sure you're putting your purpose to work either at your job or at your philanthropic volunteer life. Very important. Number three, assess your environment. Do you live in a place that's dirty, that you have to drive every place to, that's surrounded by junk foods? If you do, I would think about trying to move.
Yeah.
Or if not, shaping your own immediate surroundings. And then I would say the final thing is to measure. If you can't measure your longevity or your happiness, you can't manage it. We have a couple tools on our website that they're free, and we organize them, or we develop them with universities that can measure not only your life expectancy, but your happiness, and give you customized suggestions on how to increase your own individual lifespan and happiness expectancy.
Fantastic. Well, that website with lots of other resources is called bluezones.com, right?
Bluezones.com.
Bluezones.com. Right. Yeah. And once again, Dan Buettner's landmark first book is called The Blue Zones, Lessons for Living Longer from the People Who've Lived the Longest, as well as three other bestsellers, including his latest, The Blue Zones of Happiness, Lessons from the World's Happiest People. Dan Buettner, thanks so much for talking with me.
It was a blast. Thank you.
Thanks again to Dan Buettner for coming on the podcast. In case you missed it before, you can order his books The Blue Zones, The Blue Zone Solution, Thrive, and The Blue Zones of Happiness on Amazon or Audible. For lots of other fascinating stuff, visit bluezones.com and follow Dan on Twitter at @bluezones. Support for today's show comes from Google Play. Did you know that you can now download and listen to audiobooks on Google Play? That's right, with hands-free listening using Google Assistant or Chromecast, you can enjoy thousands of titles a la carte, no subscription necessary. There's even multi-device integration across the Google ecosystem. And for a limited time, you get $10 off your first one by visiting g.co/play/kick. That's g.co/play/kick. Find your story with audiobooks on Google Play. If you're on the fence about life insurance, get down with Ladder. Ladder is the smart, easy way to get and manage life insurance. Just go online and apply. It only takes a few minutes. With Ladder, there's no paperwork or fees, and you can change it anytime without penalties. Ladder is licensed and backed by trusted partners with billions in coverage. Go to ladderlife.com and get off the fence about getting life insurance. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on iTunes and leave us a review. You can follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at Kick-Ass News Pod. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, and ideas at comments@kickassnews.com. I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.